This is Charlie Bost reading the News Gazette for Thursday, March 9th, 2017. I'll start on the front page. Article titled, Founder Says He'd End Event If He Could. It's by Ben Zigterman, Champaign. The founder of unofficial St. Patrick's Day agrees it's time for it to end, but says there's little bars can do. As far as I'm concerned, I've wanted it to go away for several years, said Scott Cochran, owner of Campus Town Bar's Red Lion, Firehouse, and the Clybourne. After 23-year-old University of Illinois student Jonathan Morales died this weekend in connection with the drinking holiday, U of I Chancellor Robert Jones has called for discussions on how to end unofficial. Cochran said he hasn't heard from anybody yet, but is happy to discuss it. However, he's not sure what bars will be able to do. Obviously, we lost a life, so there's a problem with it, he said. We don't have any issues in the bars, which seem to be very controlled. For over a decade, Champaign has issued emergency orders for the weekend that include limiting bar hours, not allowing alcohol sales in pitchers, and raising the bar entry age to 21. As far as I'm concerned, they've pushed it into apartments, and there's no controls there, Cochran said. Official started in 1995 when bar owners tried to recover lost revenue from St. Patrick's Day, which falls during spring break. In 1996, it gained the name Unofficial St. Patrick's Day. It was only at my establishments, then everybody jumped on, Cochran said. He trademarked the name in 1998, according to the Illinois Secretary of State's office. Three students have died in accidents related to unofficial since it began, though none have happened at bars, Cochran said. Like CAM's owner, Eric Meyer, Cochran is concerned that public attempts to shut down unofficial could backlash. Young kids are going to find some reasons to celebrate something. It's what they do, he said. If anything's done to end unofficial, it's going to have to be well thought out. I think there could be a major backfire. The second article I'll read is titled, Faculty Petition for a Tougher Stance Against Racial Hostility. With tensions rising over a free speech versus hate speech debate on college campuses, several academic units are pressing University of Illinois administrators to take a stronger stance against words and actions they say threaten students. Chancellor Robert Jones sent out a mass email 2 weeks ago, responding to concerns about chief-related unofficial St. Patrick's Day t-shirts, harassment of Muslim students, anti-immigrant messages on the quad, and the defacing of an Israeli flag at a protest. He urged the campus to challenge hateful rhetoric with speech that builds connections and shared understanding. But five ethnic studies departments said the statement didn't go far enough to denounce the behaviors. Faculty from African American Studies, American Indian Studies, Asian American Studies, Gender and Women's Studies, and Latino Studies presented Jones with a petition Monday on racism and free speech. It said his email was insufficient at best and condoned a climate of racial hostility and demonstration in which Muslims, immigrants, and undocumented students feel threatened, noting a rise in intimidation and violence nationwide, including attacks on Jewish cemeteries and mosques. The petition cited messages scrawled in chalk on the quad, such as, build the wall, stop supporting, start deporting, Sharia free zone, and imagine an immigrant free America, When other students caught the chalkers on video, the perpetrators threatened to report undocumented students to the police, it said. On Tuesday, a blue swastika was also found on an exterior wall of the English building, though it was quickly removed. The refusal on the part of the University of Illinois to denounce even the content of the messages or the threats themselves only emboldens students to continue these unrelated acts of intimidation, safe in the knowledge that the university will do little to protect students from harm. Furthermore, the administration's approach has made some students more vulnerable than others, the petition said. Jones. Claim offensive. At Monday's campus Senate meeting, Jones acknowledged that his original message fell short of communicating the university's core values. There were some things that we didn't say, we didn't express as forcefully as we should, he said. We need to speak clearly about those issues and not condone speech that is divisive and demeaning and speech that is threatening to anyone who is a member of this community. He also promised to revisit the U of I's policy on chalking and other provisions in the Student Code of Conduct to ensure we are more explicitly addressing the source of the behavior we've seen over the last several months. And he said the campus is already trying to help students, faculty, and staff trying to navigate new restrictions on immigration and citizenship. But the chancellor took exception to the petition's suggestion that the university's approach represented a tolerance for xenophobia, racism, as well as white supremacy in forms of free speech. He said he left his research work 38 years ago for an administrative career to help the University of Minnesota strengthen its diversity programs and has devoted many years to that work. I take that comment to be offensive. It's not the way, as a university community, we need to talk to each other. Jones also said mass emails alone won't resolve these divisive issues. He recently commissioned a review of the U of I's diversity programs to determine how they could be more effective, and he wants to start a campus dialogue on the broader issue of how people can communicate better during perhaps one of our most difficult times in our history. How do we better help each other understand our individual and collective responsibility to address issues of racism, offensive language, culturally demeaning actions, and speech, he said. Free versus hate speech. Currently, UI policy places no restrictions on the content of messages chalked on the quad. Legally, it can only restrict the time, place, and manner of the messages, said spokeswoman Robin Kaler. For instance, groups can chalk messages on the sidewalk, but not buildings, planters, fountains, benches, signs, bus stops, light posts, or trees, among others. Voice amplification equipment for protests can only be used over the noon hour, so it doesn't interfere with classes. And any picketing has to be done outdoors. Kaler said Jones wants to review policies at other universities with a fresh set of eyes to see if there are any best practices the UI might adopt. The faculty petition argued that there's a difference between free speech and hate speech, citing a letter written by faculty at Cal Berkeley where violent protests stopped a controversial Breitbart columnist from speaking last month. It defined hate speech as incitement, harassment, and defamation that publicly targets individuals and creates conditions for concrete harm through defamatory and harassing actions. They need to say that there is a difference between protected speech and speech that is going to incite violence, said one of the petition's authors, Latino Studies professor Rolando Romero. For us, the students feel threatened, and it's not academic anymore. A son's scary story. The issue is personal to him. His son, 31, was attacked by an unknown college-age man at an outdoor concert last July at the U of I Research Park. Romero's son was wearing a mock Trump hat that read, "Make America Mexico Again," a reference to the fact that some western and southern states belonged to Mexico until 1848. According to U of I police, the man stole the hat from the victim's head and ran away. When the victim chased him, the man threw the hat on the ground, tackled the victim, and began punching him. Romero said a nearby man and his two children pulled the attacker off his son. The man then jumped on his bike and rode away. U of I police have been unable to identify him, according to spokesman Patrick Wade. Romero said his son is a townie who grew up in Champaign-Urbana, went to Leal School, and graduated from the U of I. "That's why it was completely random," he said. "We're not talking about anybody's free speech here. We're talking about somebody actually beating my son." The petition asks the U of I to condemn speech that violates the campus code on discrimination and harassment, support vulnerable students, create legal resources for undocumented students, hire faculty in immigration and tribal law, commit additional resources for ethnic studies units, which educate students about cultural differences, stop production of all Chief Illiniwek merchandise, name a new campus mascot as soon as possible, and oppose hate speech under the Trump administration. This is Charlie Bost continuing, now on page A8 of the March 9th News Gazette. A couple of court items. Man gets 4 years after admitting to burglary. It's by Mary Schenck, Urbana. An Urbana man who admitted he broke into an Urbana apartment last fall has been sentenced to 4 years in prison. Kamarian Barber, 21, who listed an address in the 800 block of Oakland Avenue, pleaded guilty to residential burglary for breaking into an apartment at 810 Oakland Avenue on September 22nd and stealing items. Assistant State's Attorney Matt Banach said one of the residents returned home that day to find his front door, normally locked, unlocked. A television, PlayStation 4, and games for it were missing. Police found that an air conditioning unit had been pushed to the side to gain entry. Barber's fingerprints were found on that, Banach said. Neither of the men living in the apartment knew him, the prosecutor added. Barber was given credit for 60 days already served and ordered to make $500 restitution to the residents. In exchange for his guilty plea, another case of attempted burglary for an alleged break-in January 7th to a business at 510 North Cunningham Avenue, Urbana, was dismissed, and a petition to revoke his probation for theft was also withdrawn. Second headline, plea deal results in probation, also by Mary Schenck. Urbana, a Champaign man who admitted taking part in what he told police was a drug deal gone bad, has been sentenced to 2 years of probation. In return for his guilty plea to aggravated battery, a more serious charge of armed robbery lodged against Larome Anderson was dismissed. Anderson, 20, who listed an address in the 1500 block of Kyler Drive, pleaded guilty Tuesday to aggravated battery, admitting that on December 8th he hit a man in the eye with a hammer. Assistant State's Attorney Matt Banach told Judge Heidi Ladd the battery occurred in Anderson's home. Anderson and two other men allegedly beat up the victim, during an argument over the victim selling cannabis. Now, turning to local news on page A5. New Mahamat Eatery serves up diverse menu. Mahamat. If you blinked, you might have missed it. In the space of just a week, the Main Street Wingery transformed into the new Project 47 Smokehouse Pub and Patio. The effort was spearheaded by Justin Taylor and Brent Chester, who bought the eatery at 101 North Lombard from wingery owner Rich Minnick in late February. Taylor is better known for his enterprise at the other end of Main Street, J.T. Walker's Restaurant and Brewery, while Chester is the force behind the Chester's Barbecue Truck, whose stops at the brewery have gained a Mahamat following. But Project 47 doesn't replicate either of those menus, Taylor said. Although they've built the establishment as a smokehouse, there's a lot on the menu that isn't barbecue, he added. That includes an array of creative flatbed pizzas, sandwiches with some unique burgers. While J.T. Walker's is known for its half-pound burgers, Project 47's menu features thinner steak burger-style meat patties. In the kitchen, Chester is manning the smoker for barbecue enthusiasts, creating dishes like brisket, wings, and pulled pork nachos. Before last weekend's opening, Taylor said they'd toyed with the fast casual concept in which diners order at the counter, but at least for now, they've kept the Wingery's table service model. Retaining the Wingery's customer base was important, he added. Most of the Wingery staff also stayed on through the transition. Wall decals featuring World War II era bombers honor the military. Active and retired military personnel get a 10% discount at Project 47. This was by Amelia Benner of the Mahamat Citizen, and there's a picture with the caption, "The renovated interior at Project 47 Smokehouse, formerly the Main Street Wingery in Mahamat." The next local item is from the city of Urbana, mayoral forum to be rescheduled. Urbana. Wednesday night's Urbana mayoral forum was canceled after Republican candidate Rex Bradfield told organizers he was ill. The forum, featuring Bradfield and Democratic nominee Diane Marlin, will be rescheduled, the League of Women Voters of Champaign County said. And that was by Tom Kasich. The next local is EU ambassador to speak on campus. Champaign. The European Union's ambassador to the United States will discuss Europe's refugee crisis, the Brexit process, and Europe's response to the new U.S. administration in a talk Wednesday at the University of Illinois. Ambassador David O'Sullivan is scheduled to give a State of the European Union address at 10 a.m. in the ballroom at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center, 601 South Lincoln Avenue, Urbana. The speech will be followed with a reception. Both events are free and open to the public. It's the central event of the 15th annual EU Day, sponsored by the U of I's European Center, intended to give participants a chance to learn about the European Union, its relationship with the US, and its role in promoting international relations. This year's EU Day has added significance as 2017 marks the 70th anniversary of the drafting of the Marshall Plan, a U.S. aid effort that assisted in Europe's recovery after World War II, and the 60th anniversary of the Treaty of Rome, which laid the foundation for what would become the European Union. That article was by Julie Wirth, and there's a small picture of O'Sullivan, David O'Sullivan. And the last of the local that I'll be reading, Rantoul Police Department. Search for police chief underway. Rantoul. The search for a new Rantoul police chief has begun. Catherine Johnston, the village's human resources director, said an April 7th application deadline has been set, and then we will start the recruitment review process and kind of go from there. Johnston said the village is trying to encourage diversity and posted an ad on the National Organization for Black Law Enforcement Executives website, as well as a Latino site. The minimum education required is a bachelor's degree with a master's preferred. Also a must, a minimum of 7 years of increasingly responsible experience in a law enforcement agency. The candidate must also have a proven track record in a union environment and the ability to work with elected and appointed officials. Salary will range from $110,000 to $115,000, depending on qualification. Village Administrator Jeff Feigenschuh said he hopes the position can be filled by mid to late May. The village has been without a police chief since January 20th, when Ehrman Blevins resigned after less than a year on the job. He did not give a reason. And that article was by Dave Hinton from Rantoul Press. Now there's a sports article which starts on page A1 of today's News Gazette. That's March 9th. Illinois basketball, today versus Michigan, 11 a.m. Bumpy ride for U of I rival. High winds sent plane off runway and into a ditch, but nobody hurt. The article is by Scott Ritchie, and there's a picture with the caption, "A Michigan team plane sits beyond the runway at Willow Run Airport in Ypsilanti, Michigan on Tuesday after the charter was forced into an aborted takeoff. The Wolverines are still scheduled to face the Illini 11 a.m. today at the Big Ten tournament in Washington, D.C. Champaign. Illinois and Michigan are still scheduled to open the second round of the Big Ten tournament at 11 a.m. today in Washington, but the two teams will have had vastly different experiences in reaching the nation's capital, with the Wolverines not arriving until just hours before the game. Illinois' trip was routine. The Illini departed Champaign on Tuesday evening, arrived that night, and practiced in the nation's capital on Wednesday. Michigan's trip was anything but. The Wolverines were scheduled to depart early Wednesday afternoon. High winds, which led to an aborted takeoff of their chartered flight, sent the plane through a fence, across a road, and into a ditch. None of the 109 passengers on board, the team, coaches, band, cheerleaders, and assorted family members, or seven crew members, were reported as injured. After attempting to take off in high winds, takeoff was aborted, and after strong braking, the plane slid off the runway, a statement from Michigan read. The plane sustained extensive damage, but everyone on board was safely evacuated and is safe. Brendan Quinn of MLive.com said Big Ten officials on hand at the Big Ten tournament told MLive that no procedures are in place for moving games or rescheduling games in a situation like this. The Wolverines stayed in Michigan on Wednesday, opting for game day travel. Right now, I think the best decision is to wait till tomorrow and just get up early and go, Coach John Beilein told WXYZ-TV's Dave Llewellyn. Now I'll read one editorial from the March 9th News Gazette. Developing plan of attack. Fueled by the necessary moral outrage, the university's new chancellor has issued a declaration of war. Let's give University of Illinois Chancellor Robert Jones credit for plain spokenness about his intentions to end unofficial St. Patrick's Day, the annual binge drinking event that took place last weekend. He says he intends to initiate a process that includes campus and community leaders to determine how we transition out of this thing. But let's also give Jones credit for acknowledging that it's not an original idea. I'm not the first chancellor to make this plea, he said. Jones is exactly right about the alcohol-fueled exercise of mass stupidity that's dressed up as a good time and draws hundreds of UI students as well as outsiders to the campus. If good intentions were all that's required, unofficial would have been a history a long time ago, just like Hash Wednesday and the Halloween revelry in which participants took over the streets in campus town. But it has demonstrated staying power, even in the face of real tragedy, 3 alcohol-related deaths and annual hospital visits for alcohol poisoning, 20 this year. The obvious question is, how will the U of I and the cities regulate unofficial out of business, assuming that they can regulate it out of business? A News Gazette story Tuesday outlined the steps to which the UI has gone to discourage participation, everything from writing letters to parents and banning out-of-town overnight visitors to U of I dorms on unofficial weekend. All kinds of programs outlining all kinds of safety and punitive measures have been put in place. At the same time, the cities have stepped up law enforcement, delayed bar opening times, and observed strict limitations on crowd sizes at campus entertainment venues. What's next? Are the cities going to shut down all the campus bars for the whole weekend or prohibit alcohol sales en masse? Just how heavy-handed does it have to get in terms of enforcement? Would that even work? There are private parties, and most private party planners are savvy enough to plan in advance if alcohol sales are restricted. The simple fact is that people are free to make choices, even bad ones, and many choose to join the faux festivities even as they know, or should know, of the risks associated with binge drinking. There's a cat and mouse element here too, and it can't be overlooked. This event was initiated by campus bar owners as a profit-making venture. Who knew they needed clever promotion to sell beer to college students? But it would be naive not to realize that one of the reasons unofficial has taken on a life of its own is because the college-age participants know the adults on and off campus hate it, look down their noses at it, tisk-tisk about it, and pretty much fuss about these kids these days. Well, if that's not enough to fire up the average campus rebel without a clue for a little alcoholic excess, particularly in lieu of attending class, it's hard to know what would. When even the unofficial related t-shirts prompt the heads of some faculty members to explode, they realize they've struck gold. After all, there are some activities that are so moronic, so futile, and so pointless as to be irresistible to the average college-age kid. That's what Chancellor Jones is up against. He's not the first to take up this challenge. Chances appear to be good that he won't be the last. Nonetheless, good luck. He'll need it. And that ends part one of today's reading of the News Gazette, March 9th, 2017. This is Charlie Bose signing off.